Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of January 16th through the 23rd. Today we're speaking with Mary Meehan, a freelance writer and public speaker, who is sought after to give talks about life issues at universities and other locations across the country. She recently wrote an article for the magazine, which looks at the effects of war on children, both born and unborn. Mary spoke to us by phone from her home in Maryland.
Now, could you start by telling me a little bit about how long you've been an advocate for life issues and how you got involved in these causes?
Oh, goodness, it's a long story. I suppose my first really serious involvement was with the 1968 Eugene McCarthy campaign when he ran as an insurgent anti-war candidate against President Lyndon Johnson. And I also worked for several other anti-war candidates at the congressional level. And then after Mr. McCarthy retired from the Senate, I did research and other work for him for a number of years. So I really started with the anti-war issue, and the abortion issue was coming front and center as the Vietnam War was winding down, something I found very depressing, frankly. And I was surprised that so few anti-war people seemed to be speaking out against it. But I came in contact with a wonderful group of people who were part of the consistent ethic movement, consistent ethic of life. In fact, were founders of it in many respects. And that led to quite a bit of active involvement as well as writing. And eventually, I also dealt with the euthanasia and suicide, death penalty, and almost all the life and death issues.
Now, people have a tendency, I think, to separate some of the issues you're talking about, so the issue of war and the issue of abortion, seeing one maybe as a matter of national defense and one as a life issue. But the article that you wrote for us really demonstrates the real impact that war can have on abortion rates, on birth rates, and on children. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, this is something that I very much hope more pro-lifers will look into very seriously. I was a little surprised in a way when I started looking for evidence that there's really quite a bit of anecdotal evidence in particular, but there haven't been many major studies of the effects of war on abortion. And I think it's important to have more studies on that issue. And it's especially important to have more writing and reporting about it at all levels of the press, the secular press, church-related press, all the media, and the various types of media. I think it's been an overlooked issue, and it needs a lot more attention.
How can we help people to more clearly see this connection between these issues as all life issues?
Well, there are a number of different ways of approaching it, and that's a very important question that you raise, because so often people on all the movements opposed to violence become so upset and frankly depressed and angry often about the violence they know so well and have studied and protested against that they become ineffective in reaching other people on those issues. And I think it's very important to always consider where other people are coming from. For example, some people who are strong supporters of war have fought in wars. Some have sustained very serious injuries or have family members who have or who lost their lives. And that can make it very hard for them to consider the idea that a given war may have been an unjust war. Just as many people who have been involved in abortion on a personal level find it very difficult to listen to arguments against abortion. So you have to think of ways of approaching it that take account of people's personal experiences, and sometimes listening to their experiences is very helpful so that you know where they're coming from and have some idea of how you might respond and point to better ways of dealing with problems and violence.
Right, sort of seeing what you might originally think as an opposing group as individuals, as people.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and to avoid stereotypes about them and to be very sensitive to their personal experiences. Sometimes it's a very fine line, though, to walk there because you want to be honest but you want to respect their feelings. And there are ways of doing that. I wrote a long essay about this in a book called Consistently Opposing Killing, where a number of us consistent ethics supporters contributed chapters, and I dealt specifically with the idea of the art of persuasion. And possibly some of your readers would find that helpful.
So I think some people have difficulty reconciling the need to protect the country with the need to eliminate civilian deaths.
The conflict between true self-defense and what contemporary warfare really is,
right,
I guess, is part of it.
Right.
And I would say here, too, and I think this is a very important point, that many anti-war people are not strict pacifists. Probably the majority, I would guess. Many of them do believe in just war theory, but they do insist on a very strict interpretation of it. And in my experience, people who are pacifists and people who are strict interpreters of just war theory usually come out on the same way on a given war. Mm-hmm. And one of the key points in just war theory, as I understand it, is that war must always be a last resort. You have to consider every other possibility. You have to make serious diplomatic efforts to reach some sort of agreement. And they have to be real efforts, not the sham efforts that are sometimes made just to show that, or to convince people that you made an effort, but you really didn't. You know, that happens a lot, I'm afraid. But a serious effort to avoid the war because, and this point goes way back to ancient times, the realization that war wreaks such devastation on people and on countries, such terrible devastation, that you do have to go the last mile to avoid war. And I think if you look at history, and I majored history in college, you find that so many wars in the perspective of time were totally unnecessary and very, very devastating to both countries or all the countries involved in the war.
Now, you also write that all major combatants in the current wars have innocent blood on their hands, but that Americans have a special responsibility for what their own government does. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, we can't control the moral decisions of other people. We can control our own. And the people of other countries who do have some effect on their government have the same responsibility we have to be sure our government does act ethically. Now, unfortunately, people in some countries really don't have much say, although they do always have the great alternative of what's been called strategic nonviolent action, that is, resisting an unjust government or an unjust war. Mm-hmm. That's not easy, but it has been done and can be done, and that is an alternative for folks in that situation. But we, of course, do have a democratic form of government in our country. If anything, that makes our responsibility even greater, I believe. And so does the fact that we are the most powerful country in the world. My study of history leads me to believe that Lord Acton, the great British historian, was absolutely right when he said that power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think that's the greatest lesson we can learn from history. And because our country is so powerful, we have to be very much aware of that. I think that power has corrupted us in many ways, or at least has corrupted many people in the government. And I could give many instances of that, but I think that has a lot to do with the fact that we've been involved in so many wars in my lifetime. I was born in the Second World War, and it seems to me we've been involved in wars more frequently in the last 30 years. Quick wars and long wars, and in my view, most of them unjust wars.
What do you think are some of the challenges that we face when trying to get Catholics to see that an anti-war stance and an anti-abortion stance are both compatible and necessary?
That, again, goes back largely to people's experience, and I think it's very important to return again to my point about the sensitivity you have to show to people's experience. You have to walk that fine line. You have to be honest, but you also have to say what you think the facts show. And I think history can be a great help there. I think also perhaps we have to promote a somewhat different idea of patriotism than many people have grown up with. I think sometimes popular patriotism really amounts almost to flag worship and the idea that you must follow the flag wherever it goes and sort of the my country right or wrong approach. But rather, I think we have to, as I believe Albert Camus said about France and his love of France, that I want to love my country in justice. And a great American statesman, Carl Schurz, who was a general in the Civil War on the Union side and later U.S. Senator, responded to the my country right or wrong by saying, my country right or wrong, when right, to be kept right, when wrong, to be set right. And I think that should be our guiding principle.
Now, March for Life is going to take place this month. How effective do you think that is in gaining support for a broader sense of life issues? Most of that obviously focuses on abortion, but do you think that it could be expanded to include some of these issues?
Oh, I would love to see that. I think at this point it's not likely to happen from the organization that sponsors it, the March for Life organization. They have always insisted on that special focus. However, people are free to join the march with their own signs, and there have been some peace signs occasionally. I'd like to see a lot more of them out there and more discussion among the marchers themselves of all the life issues, essentially. I think they all come together. And one other point I'd make is that it's important for people to realize that these great life and death issues transcend all the normal political boundaries in this country, all the ideological divides. They really do transcend those divides. And there are some approaches you can use, for example, in an anti-war position that are very effective with conservatives, because there is much in the conservative approach to life that really does suggest a preference for peace, a very strong preference for peace. Now, it's often been overlooked. It's being articulated today, certainly very much by Dr. Ron Paul in his presidential campaign. And I think that probably comes as a surprise to a lot of people. They've thought of all conservatives as automatically supporting wars, and it's really not the case. And similarly, there are a substantial number of liberals who are opposed to abortion and on very liberal grounds, liberal principles. And I think partly it's a matter of fighting through some stereotypes on all the sides and appealing to everyone's interest in the right to life.
All right. Have you found some arguments that appeal to both sides? Or is it often, different arguments that appeal more to one side or the other?
I think usually different arguments appeal more to one side or the other. But I think, for example, on the abortion issue and in the question of what war does to children, both those issues, I think most human beings have a very strong instinctive feeling that they should protect the young, and especially the youngest and those who are least able to defend themselves or totally unable to defend themselves. And liberals think of that as standing up for the little guy. That's a great liberal tradition. Some conservatives perhaps think of it or feel it more as a matter of chivalry, almost, if you go back to the medieval idea of chivalry. But at root, maybe those two approaches are very similar. It's just a different historical way of looking at them. But that instinct that is so important to humanity and to survival, really, that certainly is one that both sides share. And also the concept of justice, just basic justice.
It seems to me those unifying concepts that you name would take away a little bit the idea of sides at all.
Right. These life and death issues really do transcend politics, and they should. And people from both sides should come together. There's a very interesting effort that's been underway for a couple of years now where some people from the left and right who are basically anti-war, again, not necessarily pacifists, but against the current wars, have been having contacts. They had one major meeting in Washington a year or two ago. And it's very good to see people from both sides coming together. And I'd like to see a lot more of that on the pro-life side, too.
Is there a way to make that happen, do you think?
I think so. There's a group called Consistent Life, which is having a 25th anniversary conference in March near Washington. And they have been working on doing that on all the major life issues for a long time. And they're hoping, and I hope, that this conference will give a much stronger boost to the idea of a consistent ethic. And these are people who are not just intellectuals, although some of them certainly are, but many people who have been down in the political trenches and the activist trenches working very hard for many years and have a lot of good ideas about how to approach the issues. So I think that's a very hopeful sign.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Carrie.